Hello, everyone. Happy Easter. Hi, Cheryl. It was nice sitting and listening to you today. I am here for the Seven Steps to Awakening, beginning tonight with quote 505. And what I'm going to do is just put a link in the room. The link goes to my journal. My writing on quote 505. If there's anybody listening on the radio, you can get to my journal by going to RDA7, that is the digit 7, it is not spelled out, RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get to that website, if you look on the right hand side, you'll see a menu with step 1, step 2, step 3. Underneath step 2, you will be able to find the numbering sequence to click on, and then from there find your way to 505. So the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to 505. I've had a pretty quiet day, so I'm still feeling very, very quiet. So why don't we just go into some silence. Amen. I think you guys may know that May 10th through 12th, which is Mother's Day weekend, I will be out in Santa Barbara. I'll be there with Cheryl Valentine and Teddy Poppy and Larry Sire. The weekend is being called, I think it's being called an intimate weekend with Regina. Let me see, an intimate gathering with Regina, I think is the name of it. Let me look that up real quick. Yeah, an intimate gathering with Regina, which is fine. But what I really feel is going to happen that particular weekend is that we're going to have an intimate gathering with ourself, with our inner voice. There's definitely going to be some facilitation that's going to happen. There's going to be times of silence, times of music, discussion, laughing. I think we have an opportunity to take a tour of the mission that we're staying at, this beautiful mission in Santa Barbara. We'll give people just free time to wander around the grounds. But I really think it's going to be a wonderful retreat. And so if there is anybody that's interested in registering for this retreat, you can go to the website. It's anintimategatheringwith.org, which is nice because then after the with, instead of the Regina, you can just imagine an intimate gathering with self. But if you go to anintimategatheringwith.org, you'll be able to find out more about the weekend and then if you want to, register. So I know I'll see some of y'all there. And I think it's going to be a wonderful weekend. It's a beautiful place. Right now, as I mentioned, I'm going to do the Seven Steps to Awakening, which I love. I love the Seven Steps to Awakening. It's the book that I've been using last year and this year to take me into deep contemplation. Today we're going to start with number 505 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. What I'll do first is read the quote, and then we'll go and we'll look at my journal. And when we look at my journal, we're looking at what I wrote after contemplating the quote. The particular series of quotes that we're in now, they have a purpose of helping us realize, not intellectually, but at a different level, to realize that the world is not real, the body is not real. And the specific quotes that we're reading now are from the Supreme Yoga, also called Yoga Vasistha. So the first quote we're going to look at tonight, number 505, is this. Nothing, not even this body, has ever been created. And, you know, that's the kind of thought that if you try to wrap your mind around it, you can't. You can't wrap your mind around that thought. But last week when I was talking in this same set of quotes, I talked to you about some dreams that I had had, nighttime dreams. Specifically, one dream that I talked about, which I know stood out for a lot of people because I got emails around it this week, was the dream when Jasmine was lost in India. And I mentioned to you that in that dream, what was happening was I had a problem. I mean, not just the problem that my daughter was lost in India, which is enough of a problem, but I had a problem in that I was looking and trying to decide if I should just kind of stay put and watch my mind and watch my fears and let go of all of my fears around the idea that she was lost in India, or rather I should take off and hit the road, you know, looking for her frantically, you know. And in the dream I was struggling over what was the better option. You know, really, what do you do when your daughter is lost in India? You know, what do you do? And then what happened was I woke up. And when I woke up, my daughter wasn't lost in India. I also did not have to decide if watching my mind or running up and down the streets of India looking for her was the better option. There was absolutely nothing to do because the dream had no reality to it whatsoever. There was just nothing true about it. So when I woke up from the dream, all of the problems in the dream were immediately seen not to exist. It's not just that they were solved, but they never existed in the first place. And that's what this particular quote is saying about this experience. Just like that dream never actually was created. It was pure mental illusion, a mental experience, but not an actual happening. This quote from Yoga Vasistha says, "Nothing, not even this body, has ever been created." Why don't we go to my journal, which is the link that I had posted in the room before. If we look at my journal, number 505, I wrote, "The story that is seen as me does not have a goal or purpose and will not achieve something meaningful before it disappears. To give this body that kind of meaning is to give false illusion the weight of reality. There is no reality in this story or this body. Therefore, there is no meaning and there is no purpose." Now, sometimes this kind of teaching depresses people. I've known people that become very depressed about the idea that this existence has no meaning. But whenever we're depressed about that idea, it really is because we're allowing the idea to be interpreted through the ego. When this idea is being interpreted through the right mind, there's something extremely freeing in it. So you can tell by how you feel what part of your mind is interpreting the idea of no meaning. If we go back to the nighttime dream again, in the nighttime dream, I seemed to have a very serious problem. I had a daughter who was lost in India. And I needed to decide what was the best way to resolve that issue. Would it really, truly be best to watch my mind and let go of all of my fear around the issue? Was that the best thing that I could do? Or should I go and look for her? Was that the best thing that I could do? And the interesting thing is, I never even had to make that decision. All that happened was I woke up. And when I woke up, the entire scenario was non-existent. So I didn't have to make a decision. I didn't have to complete my purpose. I didn't have to make a decision and follow through on it. Somewhere in NTI, I think it might be in NTI Acts, but I'm not 100% sure. There's a place in NTI where Holy Spirit says something about, once a significant amount of realization has occurred, that if we want to, we can hang around in the world and share that realization with others to be helpful to them. But then Holy Spirit goes on to say, but whatever you do, you are only doing for yourself. And I'll tell you as the scribe, because those words can always be interpreted a number of ways. I believe that as the scribe, I automatically knew the interpretation that was intended by the words. I don't think I have the capability of misinterpreting NTI. I could misinterpret A Course in Miracles because when I read it, it goes through the intellectual mind. But NTI was received in such a direct way that I know what was meant by every sentence in there. And what was meant by those particular sentences is that it would be a mistake to choose to extend the dream in order to help others awaken. That would be a mistake. And in fact, the real thing that we would be doing if we made that choice would just be holding on to our identity as a person, and in this case, our identity as a teacher, our identity as helpful, a little longer. The best thing to do, in order to, as the Course would say, accept the atonement for yourself, the best thing to do is to let go of everything. And that includes letting go of the idea of being helpful. Now, what's interesting about this is, you know, the ego likes to screw everything up, given the chance. And even after one lets go of everything and completely surrenders into this life has no meaning, and therefore allows the apparent self to die or disappear. Even after that, there could very well be the appearance of a body. I'll use Adyashanti as an example. Continuing to help. But it could very well be a mistake on our part to judge that someone that we are observing being helpful is being helpful through their decision to be helpful. If there is no idea of a person there anymore, then the helpfulness is just occurring. There's no one deciding to be helpful. And these are the types of subtle differences that as we get, for lack of better words, closer and closer to awakening, these are the subtle differences that become very apparent. In fact, I heard about a week ago, or I saw on Facebook, a quote from Muji that said something like, awakening is not, and I could be getting, again, the quote in some ways completely wrong, but in other ways I'm getting it right. Just the exact way I'm saying it could be wrong, but the idea behind it is right. The quote was something like, awakening is, of course, a journey without distance. You're not going from one state to another state. But you are taking a trip into the subtler and subtler and subtler. And I understood what that meant because that is my experience. It's going into the subtler and subtler and subtler. So that what I need to do is I need to watch myself very, very carefully in these subtle, subtle nuances and make sure that whatever I am doing, it's not that I am doing it, it's just that it's being done. That's the subtle difference. If I am doing it, then I am giving meaning to myself as a person. And as I give meaning to myself as a person, I hold on to the ego. But if it is just being done, then I am not giving meaning to the person. And I'm allowing the undoing of the idea of person to continue. And as I mentioned, by seeing this person, Regina, as having no meaning, as having no purpose, you know, like no purpose to help others, no purpose to teach others, no purpose to do anything. When that is seen through the right mind, that is very, very, very freeing. Because you don't have to do anything. You don't, you're not burdened by anything. Action still happens, but there's no burden. And you don't have a personal attachment to outcomes, and you don't need things to go a certain way. Everything can just be as it is. So again, let's look back at the journal. The story that is seen as me does not have a goal or purpose and will not achieve something meaningful before it disappears. Again, if I see it as having a goal or an important purpose, if I believe that Regina has something very important she needs to do, then what I'm really doing is holding on to the idea of being that person. I'm valuing the person. To give this body that kind of meaning is to give false illusion the weight of reality. There is no reality in this story or this body. Therefore, there is no meaning and there is no purpose. That doesn't mean action doesn't happen, but there is a subtle, subtle difference between action happening and me having a purpose, feeling that I have something very important to do. It's funny because a lot of people actually seek what the Course calls the special function. People want to know their special function. And that usually is because people crave something important to do. And sometimes they will even, you know, say to me, you know, like you did, Regina, you know, like you did. You know, you wrote in TI, you wrote in a Ramana. You know, I want to do something like you did. You teach. But what's really important to realize is I didn't write in TI. Even Jasmine knows that. Jasmine was talking about how somebody was saying to her, you know, are you going to read in TI? And you know, Jasmine's like, well, why should I read in TI? And they said, well, your mother wrote it. And Jasmine said, my mother didn't write it. She scribed it. She knows that I didn't do that. Although there's the appearance of doing a lot of things, my best position is to stay in not giving meaning to the self. And whatever activity or projects that I seem to be involved in, always being ready for them to be completely dropped today. Always being willing to be completely forgotten by everyone today. Always being willing for everything, all this activity that seems to be going on, to stop at any time. Having no attachment and seeing no purpose to it. That's really being ready for awakening. because I'm not holding on to the dream as if it's important. What you can do is scroll down underneath 505 if you're in the journal, and you'll see a comment and reply area, and you can click on number 506. I'm going to read 506. Oh, this looks cute. And I just read the first phrase of the quote. I don't remember the quote, but the first phrase is kind of interesting, so now I'm really curious about the quote. I'm going to read 506 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Again, this quote is from the Supreme Yoga or Yoga Vasistha. Here we go. Listen to how cute the first line is. Like a frog in the blind well, foolish and ignorant people base their understanding on the experience of the moment, and on account of their perverse understanding, they are deluded into thinking that the body alone is the source of experience or awareness. Maybe we have to know something about the frog in the blind well. I don't know if that's a popular Hindu story or not, but like a frog in the blind well. Foolish and ignorant people base their understanding on the experience of the moment, and on account of their perverse understanding, they are deluded into thinking that the body alone is the source of experience or awareness. Let's go ahead and read number 506 in the journal. It seems important, the mind says. I am awakening, and I am helping others to awaken. Who is awakening? The dream character, part of the dream? The dreamer of the dream? Dreamed up illusion itself? Mind, imaginary effect of an imaginary idea? What exists to awaken or be awakened? Anything? Now, this very much follows up on last Sunday's teaching, where we looked at the idea, you know, many of us have been in the process of learning that I'm not the person, I'm not the character, but then the step we go to is I'm the dreamer of the dream. I'm the one who's projecting the dream. And that is a step that many of us go through, if not all of us. But what many people are beginning to realize now is, actually, I'm not even the dreamer of the dream. I'm that which has never changed. There's something that's occurring for us now, an awakening that's happening, where many people are seeing even the dreamer of the dream is still illusion. That would be the same as saying the ego is unreal. So if the character is unreal and the dreamer of the dream is unreal, what is there to awaken? You know, if we go back to the experience of my dream in India, did that problem about whether I should watch my mind or run through the streets need to be solved? It didn't need to be solved. Because the entire dream was unreal. One thing that's happened for me, and I'm sure it's because of the contemplation I've done in the seven steps, although I can't help but, you know, my mind doesn't seem to leave the awareness of a purpose of awakening. I don't know how else to say that. My mind does not seem to leave. I don't seem to forget that what's happening now is awakening. When I first started the awakening process, I would forget a lot. You know, I might remember in the morning while I was doing my course workbook, and I might remember during the day when I was practicing the course workbook. But, you know, when somebody came into my office with a work problem that wasn't happening, I completely forgot that I was awakening. I completely forgot that I had interest in awakening. And I went right into the problem in the old way that I used to. And it took actually, in my case, a few years, maybe 5 years, before there was just this consistent awareness that what I'm doing is awakening. And that consistent awareness is here now. Whether I'm, you know, helping my daughter look at, you know, what she might want to choose as a major in college, or whether I'm spending time with my boyfriend, or whether I'm, you know, doing foundation-related work, or whether I'm watching a TV show, there's a constant awareness that I'm awakening. And as a result of that constant awareness, I would say that there's a consistent guidance, a guidance that tells me, you know, when to let something go. You know, that's not important. Let that go. I can't, you know, go through everything it says, but there's a consistent guidance that happens in my mind. But something else is happening too now. And in fact, I wrote about this for some friends today. Some people will recognize this. There's something else that's happening too now, in that in some ways I'm being moved away from the spiritual path in the way that I've always been on the spiritual path, to what I would call a more ordinary state of being. There seems to be an awareness in me that now, and I'm not saying this would have been true earlier, and I'm not saying this is true for you now. I want to make that clear. I'm talking about me now. That now, the best thing for me to do is just to be. Not even to be busy awakening in the way I was before, you know, with lots of spiritual practice and, you know, maybe even hours a day studying. That right now, even that for me would be too much emphasis on the personality. Because who is it that's awakening? And I want to be real clear again that I'm not saying that this is true for you right now, because it wouldn't have been true for me a year ago. A year ago, my guidance was to spend all day pretty much, you know, in meditation or in contemplation. But now there's a strong feeling to let go of even the spiritual path. And to just be with whatever is, with whatever's going on, with whatever I'm doing. And maybe, if you're able to follow me in this, maybe you can see how, even if it's not right for you right now, maybe you can see how at some point too much emphasis on awakening is synonymous with too much emphasis on the personality. Because again, who's awakening? But I do think it would be completely not helpful to move into a state of saying, I'm just going to be now, when the truth is your mind is still very, very full with judgment, very, very full with hatred, very, very full with anger, with depression, with regrets, with projected hopes, with wishing things were different. You know, if your mind is still full of all those things, the truth is you wouldn't even be able to just be, because while you're trying to just be, all that stuff would be rattling off in your mind. You know, one thing that's interesting about A Course in Miracles and NTI is that it seems to be a path of purification first. The Course also calls it forgiveness, but it's a path of letting go of all of the obstacles to love's presence. And again, the Course says that knowledge, which would be equivalent to awakening, is outside of the scope of the Course. The Course says that love cannot be taught, right? But what is within the scope of the Course is to bring us to inner peace. what happens when we arrive at inner peace, true inner peace, where the mind is not judging everything, where the mind is not fixed on what goal can I do next, how can I make myself important, how can I make people notice me, blah, 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 blah. You know, what's next? Well, based on the guidance I'm receiving now, I would say next is being and continuing to notice the subtle ways that we're still holding on and letting go, letting go, letting go, letting go, moving further and further into just being without being anything specific. And again, even the spiritual path at that point starts to stand out as something that's too much attachment to the person, too much attachment to the idea of the one who's awakening. So it seems important, the mind says. I am awakening and I am helping others to awaken. But at some point that needs to be questioned. Who is awakening? The dream character, which is part of the dream, is it awakening? The dreamer of the dream, which is also dreamed up illusion, not your true self, is that what's awakening? A mind, the imaginary effect of an imaginary idea? What exists to awaken or be awakened? Anything? And seeing this clearly somehow just moves us into a state of deep relaxation, non-attachment, and trust. Let's go ahead and go to number 507. You can scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on 507. The quote from Yoga Vasistha is, "What you have called the body does not exist in the eyes of the sage." What you have called the body does not exist in the eyes of the sage. Let's look at 507 in my journal. It is time now to become blind. That's kind of interesting. Just like the frog in the blind well was interesting. Usually we're told it's time to see, right? To become unblind. But this says it is time now to become blind. Blind to that which is not true, so the light of truth can shine unhindered. The body is not true. My body is not true. His or her body is not true. Find the seeing that is blind to the body without being blind to wisdom. Do not be foolish. Foolishness is the sign of wisdom blocked by mind. Now this is a very interesting caution. When we have an intellectual understanding, or an intellectual, it's probably not even an understanding actually, it's an intellectual belief that the body is not real. And yet we don't have any true understanding or wisdom regarding that. We can become foolish. We can have a headache and feel guilty about it. We can see someone else is sick and start saying things like, you know, what did you do to bring that on? Or we can even say it to ourselves when we're sick. What have I done to bring this on? We can, you know, the extreme story, of course, and I understand someone told me this has happened because he told me he did this himself. The extreme story is that when somebody dies and someone else is mourning them, we say, oh, but it was just an illusion. I've heard of people who think, well, if the body's not real, then I should be able to eat just chocolate all the time. I shouldn't need to pay attention to nutrition. I mean, you know, all of these ideas are just foolish ideas. They have nothing to do with wisdom. They have nothing to do with guidance. They're intellectual, foolish ideas that come out of having no true understanding of truth at all. So what this is saying is even though you need to become blind to the body, you also simultaneously cannot be blind to wisdom. There's, I want to say a place, although it's not a place, but there's a place, a state, where wisdom has arisen so much within us that we do not have to look outward and assess a situation to determine what to do. We only have to listen inwardly. So we're blind to the outer situation. We don't have to look out there, see what the problem is, and figure out a solution. The only place we ever have to look is within. This is what I call living on intuition. That's what this means, to become blind to that which is not real. Don't look at the world and say, oh, look, I see this problem, and from what I've learned before, these are the possible solutions. I need to do this. Don't even look out. Be blind to the out. Always look in and let wisdom guide you in everything. Foolishness would be not looking out, maybe, but still not following intuition either. That's when you're caught in just the realm of foolishness. Always be in touch with intuition. I was sick a couple weeks ago, which some of you probably know. And one thing I felt pretty quickly after I became ill, I just felt that I needed antibiotics. I didn't really do anything with that, which is kind of funny because I don't have a doctor. You know, I don't even have a doctor. So there was just this knowing that I needed antibiotics, but that was it, just this knowing. And the next thing that happened was Danielle came into the room and you know, she saw how sick I was, and I think the idea came up first to try and get me some over-the-counter medication, but then she wasn't even sure which over-the-counter medication would be helpful. So she called a friend of hers who's a nurse practitioner. And her reason for calling the nurse practitioner was to find out what kind of over-the-counter medication to get me. And the nurse practitioner, who has never even met me, said, if she's not better by morning, I'll get her, you know, let me know and I'll write her a prescription for antibiotics. And I knew immediately to say yes to that offer because I already knew that I needed antibiotics. Now, the reason I'm telling that story is because notice that it's not like I analyzed the outside problem and said, based on this outside problem, I think I need antibiotics, and then went about trying to figure out how to get the antibiotics. Nor was it some place of foolishness where I totally denied that medicine might be helpful because Course in Miracles says medicine is magic. It was something else, right? It was something else. It was something in me that just knew antibiotics would be helpful, and yet I took no action in that direction. Didn't even tell anyone that I thought that, that I felt that. And then antibiotics were provided, even though I don't even have a doctor. You see how it's not, it's both being blind to the outside, but it's also following wisdom, and wisdom knows how to guide. I told somebody later in the week that I was on antibiotics, and her first question was that guidance? And the only answer is, yeah, I guess so. Because, you know, it just rose in me, this knowing that I needed them, and the next thing I knew, I had them. You know, and I didn't do anything. So I guess it was guidance. You know? But the mind wanting to keep us in a state of confusion and ignorance will judge things like, you know, the idea of using medication, for example. It judges that as magic, and it judges magic as bad, and if I'm going to do it, then I'm bad, and it gets us all caught up in this painful, ignorant confusion. Well, what if we let go of everything, which includes letting go of ideas that medication is good and includes letting go of ideas that medication is bad? What if we have no opinions about medication? Then aren't we free to take medication or not take medication based on how wisdom is guiding in the moment? Right? Let's see, I noticed there's someone with their hand up. I appreciate your comments, Malo77, but why don't you go ahead and put your hand down? I think I probably won't turn the mic over. Just keep right on writing in the room, because what you're writing is wonderful. Let go of judging, right? Just keep writing in the room, but I'm going to go ahead and hold on to the mic and continue the sharing from my journal. And why don't we scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 508. I'll read 508 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. There is no dream in the infinite consciousness. There is neither a body nor a dream in it. There is no dream in the infinite consciousness. There is neither a body nor a dream in it. So if we go back to my journal, I don't think I gave this link in the room, 508. Let me go ahead and give this link in the room for people who want to join us. Five oh eight says, awakeness is. This is why it is called before mind. It is before mind, and it is before the primordial idea, so it is untouched. And yet, it is not before now, so it is present. One thing that I am becoming more and more aware of is the presence of awakeness. And I know that some of you are too, so I know that you know what I'm talking about. I did used to fully believe that I was, you know, asleep, and that other people were asleep, and that we had to awaken, and that there were lots of spiritual practices we had to go through to awaken. But if you really look at that sentence from A Course in Miracles, that tells us that you know, our role is to, you know, find the obstacles or blocks, I don't remember which one, find the blocks to love's presence. Notice how that sentence tells us that love is perfectly present now. Love is not asleep. We don't really have to wake up to love. We just have to remove the blocks to its presence. Well, it doesn't seem that way, I understand, when there's lots of blocks. And like I said, I used to fully believe that I needed to awaken and that other people needed to awaken because we were asleep. But something is happening, you know, now where there is an awareness that awakeness is. It's not a mental awareness. It couldn't possibly be a mental awareness because this awakeness precedes mind. It's like mind can't see it. So the best way to describe how we're aware of it is that it's at an intuitive level. But what's really nice about being aware of it is that somehow when we're aware of it, we're also aware that everyone is okay, even when they think they aren't. And we can even work with people helping them, if we're asked to look at their minds and see what block to love's presence is causing them a problem right now, or physically take care of someone that may be sick, or feed someone that may be hungry. We can still take those actions if that's the actions that move through us, without really having some kind of a fear attachment to the story, without ever feeling that something is really wrong. There's just this feeling that's indescribable that everything is okay, always. And that feeling that everything is okay, always, comes from this intuitive awareness of awakeness. Because in awakeness, everything is okay, always. It's never been touched by an illusion at all. It's never been in any way stained. You know, today's Easter, and, you know, in the Bible, you know, Jesus is described as the unblemished lamb. Well, that's the truth of what we all are. We're that unblemished lamb. It's never been touched by anything. It's completely unblemished. And as somehow, you know, I suppose through removing the blocks to love's presence, as somehow that awareness rises of that unblemished lamb, then regardless of the appearance in front of us and regardless of our physical involvement in the appearance, there's a peace in us that comes from knowing all is well. And it can't be explained, and no sense in trying to explain it to someone who is not prepared to realize it themselves. So if someone else is very frantic because they fully believe the illusion, the wisdom that comes from knowing all is well does not say to them, oh, it's just an illusion. That would be back to the intellectual foolishness. Wisdom doesn't do that. If someone is very, very upset by an appearance, wisdom is much more likely to just be helpful in whatever way is best in the moment to try and relieve some of their fear. If a person is hungry, it might give food. If a person is sick, it might give medication. If a person is sad, it might give a hug. It doesn't need to go around telling everyone that all is well. It just knows it within itself. And somehow it carries that with it. So maybe in some way that sense that all is well, and yet with this compassion. Compassion seems to be understanding that even though all is well, not everyone yet realizes that. And so there's compassion. It doesn't have a fear behind it. It's not a fear involvement in the story. That would not be compassion. But it's an understanding. All is well, but this person doesn't realize it. Kind of like if you're working with a child who believes that, you know, there's monsters under the bed or monsters in the closet. You know all is well. You know there are no monsters. But you have compassion for the child who's scared to death because the child thinks there is. And so in some way, you take action to help relieve the child's fear. True compassion knows all is well. True compassion is not fearfully involved in the story. And yet, it understands that the person or people before us now, the person or people that we're in the presence of, do not know that all is well. And therefore, some kind of help may be necessary to help relieve their fear. But our awareness that awakeness is helps us to realize that all is well. I would say one of the primary awarenesses in me is that there's never anything to worry about. There just isn't. There's never anything to worry about. Even though I can't tell you how the appearance of a particular problem is going to be solved, and can't even tell you if it will be solved. I somehow know there's never anything to be worried about. That's awakeness is. That's that realization. If we go down underneath 508, underneath the comment and reply area, you can click on 509. In the Seven Steps to Awakening says, though this universe seems to have existed for a long time, and though it seems to be a functional reality, still it is pure void, and it is no more real than an imaginary city. All right, let's look at the journal. 509 in the journal says, there is time and space, memories and thoughts, actions and story, and a nighttime dream which does not exist at all. This is realized upon awakening. The same is true of this experience now. So, in the dream where Jasmine was lost in India, there was time and space. You know, there was earlier in the dream, you know, her and Danielle were with me looking at an elephant and a camel. And then her and Danielle left to go looking around. And for a while, I was still occupied with the elephant and the camel, doing things with the elephant and the camel. And I was not at all concerned with Danielle and Jasmine. And then a certain amount of time passed. And I realized they should have been back. I asked a question, had anybody seen them? Someone said, you know, Danielle's here in this room. I go and I open, it's a curtained room, I open the curtain, and Danielle is sitting there like in a fetal position, very fearful, barely able to speak. But I'm able to get out of her the fact that Jasmine is lost, that she doesn't know where Jasmine is. Fear strikes me. I move away from where Danielle is to another place. And then I start facing the problem in my mind. You know, what should I do? Should I just let go of my fear of what might have happened to my daughter, or should I go looking for her? You see, there was time and there was space. There were thoughts. What do I do about this? Do I let go of, do I watch my mind and let go of my fear? Do I just stay put and be still, or do I go looking for her? There were memories. As I was thinking, do I go looking for her? There were memories of the streets and what street I might go down. Everything existed until I woke up. And then it was seen that actually none of it did exist. The apparent existence of all of that was not true. And of course, this is saying that this is the same of this experience now. There's the appearance of time and space. There's the appearance of memories and thoughts. There's the appearance of actions and story. But it doesn't exist. Though this universe seems to have existed for a long time, and though it seems to be a functional reality, still it is pure void, and it is no more real than an imaginary city. Why don't we scroll down and click on number 510? Number 510 in the Seven Steps to Awakening says, nothing exists here, and therefore there are no concepts of objects. There is nothing other than the self, and the self does not conceive of an object. Nothing exists here, and therefore there are no concepts of objects. There is nothing other than the self, and the self does not conceive of an object. Let's look at 5:10 in the journal. In awakeness, there is no dream. In dream, awakeness is unknown. In awakeness, there is no dream. And so if there's dream, awakeness is not really known. That's similar to A Course in Miracles telling us that the real world is the experience of true perception, but not knowledge. And the real world is still a dream. So true perception comes from that awareness that awakeness is. But the awareness of awakeness is not the same thing as full awakeness. In a full awakeness, there is no dream. Let's scroll on down and click on number 511. We only have 4 minutes left, but 511 is the last quote from Yoga Vasistha. So maybe we can finish that, and then next week I can start with Sri Sankara. Number 511 in the Seven Steps to Awakening says, "It is only as long as you are not fully enlightened that you experience apparent diversity." Now, he's using the term fully enlightened. I just use the term true perception or real world. True perception or real world is a state of awareness of truth, but it is not yet fully awake. He's saying not yet fully enlightened. But yet, comparatively so, compared to where you may have been when you started, for example, it's somewhat enlightened. It's definitely enlightened compared to the way one used to see when all of the blocks to love's presence were in place and believed. But if you still experience a world, if you still experience perception, and it's not only the self that you know, then you're not, quote, fully enlightened or fully awake. It is only as long as you are not fully enlightened that you experience apparent diversity. There is no diversity in awakeness. So let's look at my journal. Before the sun has fully dawned, there is emerging light across the sky. Still, darkness dots the land. Seeing the world as you do means dawn is coming, but it has not yet dawned. So again, it would be fair for some of us, if not all of us, to say comparatively, there's a lot more wisdom, there's a lot more enlightenment, there's a lot more awareness of truth, awareness of awakeness here. You know, once upon a time there was none. You know, I find myself knowing not to worry. I find myself trusting all things. I find myself moving based on intuition and not the apparent outer situation. You know, all of this is a very awake way of living compared to the way I used to live too. That's like the emerging light across the sky. Before the sun comes up, you look over there and it's not wholly dark anymore. You can see the light. We can see the light and we live within the light. We listen to the light in ourselves. We respond from the light instead of from the darkness. But it's not the same thing as awake. In awake, there is no perception. In awake, there is no diversity. There is only the self. And so we need to continue to follow that same intuition that has gotten us, you could say, this far. And let it guide us into what is best for us now. And with that, I'm done. And next week we'll start with the Sri Sankara quotes. So Nice talking to y'all. Happy Easter. Have a good night. Bye.